Okay. Hey.
Catch a vibe. We're gonna get you to the other side. Going you way back to the time. Reminisce and relax your mind. And catch a vibe.
Catch a vibe like a throwback. You with the bridge, about to turn it up. Picture perfect, no Kodak. And ain't no holdbacks. We getting real, getting raunchy. We bridge millennials, baby. We keep it saucy.
You're now listening to the Bridge Millennial Podcast. Hey, homies out there, if you don't know, the Bridge Millennial Podcast is the shared perspective of the Bridge Millennial generation on culture, media, mental health, and society. My name is Shannon Ashlea.
Want to give him your number too? Like, what was that about? That was very much.
I don't know. I thought it was, you know, time for like a new, different vibe. So
okay, we
there
that
was that. It was a moment. That was a moment. The moment's over. What's good, Rob?
What's happening? How have you been? How's your 2022 wrapping up?
2022 is wrapping up very nicely in a neat little bow. Like the present it was. 2022 taught me a lot, and I'm excited for what 2023 is going to bring. I am taking the year out performing as I brought the year in, and I think that is a blessing. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Pretty much the same. I'm the most mature that I've ever been, which is good, and I'm coming in with a very level head. I'm a lot less judgmental than I came in the year with. Learning to be more forgiving, more compromising, listening better. So I'm really good with 2022. And I'm looking forward to what 2023 got going on too.
I think on that note, I believe that 2022 has definitely taught me more about choosing your battles, picking your battles, picking them wisely. I also believe that this year I learned a little more about not giving others the power to control my emotions or the power to set me off, or just limiting the power that others have over me has been such a freeing thing. So that is one of the lessons that I definitely can say changed me. And I think I learned a little bit more about love and friendship this year, for sure. And the many different faces that love takes. I'm just feeling really blessed for the people that I have in my life. I do feel like I have several soulmates in my life currently, and I'm living in the now, but I'm excited for the future.
That's what's up. That's a good mentality to have walking into the new year. So that's what's up. What you got for us today for the vital information?
And now more vital information for your everyday life.
There are a couple of different celebrities that are going through it right now, but I kind of want to chit-chat about Brittany Griner, and her release. You're laughing at me. I said Brittany Griner.
Yeah. At that Griner slip. Tell me about what give me the, I'm missing out. What's the deal?
So Brittany Griner was placed in a Russian prison for carrying, I believe it was like a CBD oil or something of that nature in a, what are those things called? Not a vaporizer, but a vape. Yeah, a vape. And they have been holding her pretty much all year. And she finally was released this week. She was released on a prisoner trade. So they traded her for someone else. And since her release, there's just been a lot of unnecessary drama about her decision to cut her hair. She had dreads, locks. She decided to cut those off. There was a big media uproar about that. And I'm just not really sure what's going on, but I do believe that because she is a Black female, she's being subjected to a lot of scrutiny in the media right now. And it's very bothersome. At first it was, how can we get her free? She should be free. This, and that. And now that she's back, it's like, why does she cut her hair? What is going on with this? It's for me, it's just too much. There's too much going on. And then people are saying that if she was free for, you know, from Russia for weed, then, you know, people in America who are in prison for weed should also be free. It's a lot of drama circling it. And I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that. Do you believe that if Brittany Griner was of a different race and maybe of a different sexuality, things would be panning out differently for her? Because I feel like everyone should be extremely happy that she is back home, but it just seems to be something else. So,
I mean, it's pretty much a fact at this point that a person's race, gender, sexuality, all of those things are contributing factors to how they're treated in the justice system. And I'm not as traveled as the average person, so I don't know what the international political culture is like in that country. But it's a global thing, you know? Racism was the first pandemic, you know? So, and we still are on that. So what I do think that is important, and this is something that we've spoken about, I don't know if it was on our live or we've spoken about in our other episodes, is that I hope that the world is taking the opportunity to learn from this incident and generating healthy conversation. Sometimes we generate like junk food, for lack of better words, conversations surrounding these types of issues where there is a this side versus that side. And I will say that I'm really sick and tired of people approaching the world with a this side versus that side, because that never, ever, ever gets anybody anywhere. But regardless of whether you feel like this was justified, whether you feel like it's not justified, whether you feel like her race, gender, and sexuality played a part or not, there's always going to be valid conversation. And I hope that walking into 2023, I just hope that people walk the gray area, you know, and being able to say, well, maybe if I don't agree with this, or maybe if I feel differently, I can still listen and take in the perspective of someone that I don't share ideas with. And I don't know if that's like what you wanted to hear, but I've just been on a very frustrating binge of just reflecting on that as well as other things in the media, which I'm pretty sure you have more topics, but just looking at other things in the media is starting to really annoy me that people are taking these bipolar approaches to stimulate an argument, but there's no growth and learning because we keep repeating the same shit. You know what I mean? So
I agree with you. I believe that it's interesting that you talk about this gray area, this commonality. Brittany Griner actually bonded with a crew of the flight. She bonded with the crew of the flight that brought her home. She bonded with them, and they described her as very, you know, patriotic, and they just found a lot of common ground. And I think that just goes to show you that you're absolutely right. We need to be focusing on what we are more alike and what we have in common. We need to be focusing on our similarities, and I don't think it could be any better said than that. Right. I think
hashtag humanize the news. Can we start humanizing people and events instead of like demonizing and attacking and labeling and ostracizing and just excluding? And can we start like humanizing and give a sense of a heart and a consciousness to the people that are going through these things? Both the people that are committing these acts and are victim to them, because we need to get inside the minds of these events so that we learn from them and move forward. The argument and the uproar, that's always happened since the beginning of time. That's not new. But what would be new is if we took a moment to give a fair trial to these people and give them a fair listen. And whether or not we agree, is there something that we can take from their story and apply it to our everyday lives and the people around us? So hashtag humanize the news.
I can agree with you. It very much so reminds me of the Kanye struggle and the innate response of everyone watching to take a side, whether they're for Kanye or against Kanye. But at the end of the day, I do believe that there's a lot going on that we don't know. He's coming out with these outlandish comments, but let's look at who is putting out this material. Let's look out who is uploading these videos and who's doing these interviews and who's really pulling the strings, like we talked about in an episode last year. I just feel like divided is always going to be the lesser route. When we're divided, we cannot think collectively. And I think thinking collectively is a beautiful thing because we're looking for a collective consciousness. That's how we get to enlightenment. So I agree with you. It is time to level up and stop taking sides. Stop, I hate to say, canceling, you know, this cancel culture, because it cannot be a person versus the world. That's not fair to anyone. So we'll leave it right there. Hashtag humanize the news. Hashtag humanize the news, though we already know that the people who are in charge of the news are also,
you know, I knew I was trying. You saw me trying not to go there, right?
I was like, are we going to go there? I didn't realize the episode was going to go there, but the same people who are bringing you the news are the same people who are bringing you the movies, the TV, everything in Hollywood that you see. These are storytellers. There's a reason why there are things they're leaving out. There is a reason why the news is so heavy. They want you scared. But moving forward, I did not want it to take that turn. But
for the record, I want For the record, I want y'all to know that I ain't take it there. I was about to, but I ain't take it there. But you are 1,000% right. The news and the media is not intended to humanize society. It's intended to demonize society.
Absolutely. And if you think about the things that are going on right now and things that are hot in the news, whether it be the news or celebrity news, there's always a good and an evil. There's a person we should be mad at in a situation. There's a person who we're rooting for. It's up to you which side you take. You have like the Nia Long situation and how her life was publicized before she found out about it. We know that happens to celebrities all the time. If there was a more human approach, then that wouldn't happen as much to them, because the paparazzi, they have a job that is more important than anything. And they don't care what these people's lives are really like and how they affect these people's lives. It's a sad existence for a lot of celebrities. You think about Princess Diana and how she literally died being chased down by the paparazzi. And if you all haven't seen the Harry and Meghan special on Netflix, why don't you go ahead and tune into that? Because there was a lot of sensationalism around their story. And I truly believe that this is their side. And they had the foresight to document what happened as it was happening, because the media was spinning it a different way. So that's actually going to be my recommendation for you all to watch this week. Watch Harry and Meghan get down to some of the real bona fide crown drama. We can break that down and we can really get into it, because what we face over here in America is one thing, but there's another side to it. I was just listening to Daniel Kaluuya talk about his experience with racism in the UK. That's something that we're like, what? Y'all don't they have a story too. So I think that's something interesting that we can check out. And thank you for chit-chatting with me about some of the things that are going on in the celebrity news. You're muted.
That was so ghetto. I really was given. And that was really ghetto, y'all. But I said we're not going to spin the block too far because we have some related content to talk about today for the way back.
What we gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
All right, so I have two questions for you, Shan. I got two questions. I want to talk about, like, I know that this season we doing a lot of high school stuff, but I want to take a little back further. I don't know if kids are still doing recess, but I remember recess being the highlight of the reason why we came to school. Remember we did that episode on those games that we played, like how a game of tag lasted for like a whole school season. Like we kept track of who was last it and where everybody was standing and what was base and what was not base. So one of my first question for you was, what was like a typical lit recess in your school?
A lit recess was any time that I got to race against the boys. We were at a Christian school, so I went to a Christian school, and mostly, sometimes they would let us play outside, and I just remember playing in the leaves, doing piles of leaves, and just jumping into them and it being a mess. I remember being on the jungle gym. Okay. My very first best friend, Taylor Terry, is his name. Shout out, Taylor. I got to tell you to listen to this episode. He was my very first best friend a little bit later on, but I remember vividly him falling off the monkey bars and breaking his arm. And I remember catching grasshoppers on the playground so that we can put them in our classroom in a little cage. And recess was fun, but mostly for me, I wanted to beat the boys. Racing the girls was very boring because they were all pretty slow. So when I got to race the boys, I got to show off. Yes. I'm still as competitive today. I'm a huge show off. If you know me, if I'm good at something, you don't want to play a game with me. But yeah,
I would honestly agree with that. I think racing was, you could play other games during recess, but racing, it's, don't let it be a relay race. Racing had like Olympic clout. Everyone in the school knew who beat who in the race. We all knew who the fastest person was in the race.
Because it carried over. It carried the hierarchy of who was fastest in the class kind of carried over to the rest of the class. So everyone knew, like, okay, she's the fastest. So that means that she's not to be played with. You know, that means that the boys like her and the girls want to be her. Like, you know.
And not only that, but... The majority of the games that we played at recess was speed-based, like manhunt, red light, green light. You know, everything relied on the fact that you could run really fast. So by knowing who's the fastest, you knew who you wanted to be on your team and you knew who you didn't want to compete against.
Right, and I was really irked because it was like, though I had girlfriends, most of them were slow. And it was like, sorry, boo, I don't want you on my team. We can hang out later, but I'm going to pick him or, you know, whatever. So that was another thing. Like, there were people you did not want on your team because you just knew that they were going to slow you down.
Have you ever had a situation where you beat somebody and then they lied about it?
Yes, actually.
What was the name?
Taylor Terry, if you're still listening. Taylor, if you're still listening, there was a moment outside of the eighth grade prom. Ooh, you thought I forgot. We took off our prom shoes. And mind you, I actually went to prom with Taylor our junior year. Actually, I miss you, bro. What's going on with you? But anyway,
where's he at?
Well, I'm from Atlanta. So I do believe he still lives in Georgia. I'm not sure though, to be honest.
We might have to bring him on for so you can
read. We might have to, yeah, tell you what's going on. But yeah, we raced outside of the school, our middle school, and I was barefoot and I beat him. And to this day, probably not to this day, but for a long time after, he swore that he beat me, and it just was not true. So I'm saying right now, Taylor, if you're out there, I hope you're not still trying to carry on this lie, because
that's not a good
we're just too old, bro.
It's cool. I feel like you, one thing you don't lie about is your feet. You do not lie on your feet. Either you can run or you can't. Either you could jump or you can't. You do not lie on your feet. The equivalent to lying about winning a race or being fast when you're really not is, as an adult, that would be equivalent to like lying on your dick. Like, just don't lie about that. Like, there's space for every speed. Like, every speed has a job. Even in those games, everybody has a job. You might not be a racer, but you might be the dude that's standing out with your hands out for the tag. For when they, to let them know, you know, you could call the shots and be a ref, but do not lie about your speed.
Keep score. You can keep score.
Yeah. So my second question for us was, that was a typical lit recess. What was the typical lit after school hangout, like, or club or activity? Like, what was, you know, we all had like those schedules, like we knew on Wednesdays we had this after school, blah, blah, blah. What was like your favorite after school activity, routine, hangout, whatever?
And what age are we?
We could do like no younger than eighth grade. Prior to eighth grade, it don't count. You wasn't hanging out. You was just playing. But
Right. Because I did a lot of stuff, but I am... This is confessions of a former band girl. I was in the marching band. So when I joined the marching band in the ninth grade, my freshman year, I really did not want to be in the marching band. I had been in the marching band previously in the same band that was on drumline. So, you know, I was really not wanting to be in my school's band, but my mom was like, you got to do something. And I played the clarinet already, but I really wanted to dance, but the auditions had been in the spring prior, so I had missed them. So I was in the marching band as a clarinet my freshman year. That is when, if you remember last year, that's when you got my first kiss story. It was on the band bus. That was when I was a clarinet in the band. And then I went, the next year I auditioned for the dance line and I made that. So I was on the dance line for the rest of my matriculation through high school. So that was the next 3 years. And it was really fun. That was probably the most fun. There's a bond that you have with a group of people that you train with, that you perform with. You have highs and lows. You win with them, you lose with them. And it was, there was such a huge and still is band culture in the South, and particularly where I'm from, Metro Atlanta. There was no escaping that. It was a larger than life thing. It wasn't just my thing. It was everyone pretty much that I hung out with. It was their thing too. So shout out to all my band nerds and all my band geeks. I always usually end up with a band geek or a band nerd somewhere around me, and y'all are the ones. So yeah, that's my after school experience.
That's what's up. I would have to, my after school story is a little bit more emotional. My favorite activity was the debate team. I was, and this is high school, so joining the debate team was my favorite activity for a few reasons. At the time, I was interested in law. I went to one of those high schools where we could pick majors. Like, I think I've told y'all this before. I feel like everybody on the bridge knows all of our business, so nothing is a shocker anymore. But I was in the law academy. I wanted to go to law school, be a lawyer, blah, blah, blah. So I enjoyed having debate as kind of like a structure for understanding the way my mind works and how I could understand the way other people's minds works, like perspectives from around the world. I never saw myself interested in politics. until debate and understood how, like, you know, you could really, you can relate to it. It's not something that's super abstract. So I was the debate team captain. We traveled. We got some trophies. We were in the news, actually. And my best, my debate partner was my best friend who eventually became my girlfriend. So that was pretty cool. So I liked it for that, but I also struggled. That was around the time of my life where I was really struggling with self-esteem. And I had never really been in like a spotlighty type of clubby. That's not true. I was on a dance team. But in terms of in school, like in school, I had never really been on any in-school activities. All of my stuff had been outside of school. So that was the first time. And there was just this one moment where we came into school one day after whipping ass. We bust ass. There was only one school in New York that could not beat us. Shout out to Acorn. Acorn, that high school specializes in debate. That's what they do. They always kill Tournament of Champions every year. I don't know if they're still out here doing that, but nobody else could touch us. Nobody could touch us. And the crazy part is that the team consisted of just two people, me and my partner. That's it, because I went to like a hood ass school. Wasn't nobody trying to join the debate team. But slowly but surely, we started getting mass shout outs. People have heard our names on the news and, you know, Condoleezza Rice. We did a lot of stuff. And so we put the school kind of up there on the map, and we would just get mad love. The freshmen in the hallway just be clapping for us and shit. It felt very much like celebrity life. So that's where it came from. And I tell people all the time that debate kind of like really did change my life, because it taught me to understand the power of your voice and what you can truly do with it, as well as the power of listening to the voices around you. We were all ghetto ass hood kids. It was not no preppy. This was the New York Urban Debate League. Was not a prep in sight. I don't even remember debating with a white person. I feel like everybody was hood, black, saggy pants, bandanas. It was gangsters up in there.
Dipset.
It was like that. And we was, I'm going to show you some pictures one day. We're not going to put on Instagram, but we was like really lit, and they would just drop us off at these colleges with no supervision, give us a schedule, tell us where our competitions are, and we would just have to get there. And we were just lit as fuck. So that was like...
That's the early 2000s for you, y'all. They was real. Damn. Yeah, I remember...
It was that's real life. That's a fact. I don't want to drag
it. What
I
want was us to, happening?
We're going to have to double down on this for our next one. We'll like pick this way back up next episode, because I got to tell you about the time. We need a whole confession.
Hold on. You can't start the story and not tell the story. Like, it's giving so, the great thug debaters.
Making that movie.
I love that.
But tell me why we got dropped off in somebody's Monticello, New York, and this was for like semifinals. So what they would do is like the league would partner with people that will rent their house out. So we went to this family's house. They were really nice. We got dropped off. Our coaches were staying in hotels. It was like 12 of us at the time, because that was after, you know, me and my debate partner had really put us, and then we was undefeated, and then we was training them how to be undefeated, and it was crazy. So it was 8 of us, and we are, I want to say 11th grade, a couple of 10th graders, and the rest was freshmen. And they put us in a basement and like locked us in the basement. Like, we couldn't get out of the basement. They just locked us downstairs. I was just like, okay.
Was it a haze? Were y'all being hazed?
It wasn't. No, this was a family that was supposed to be hosting us in their home for 24 hours so that we could attend our tournaments. They weren't supposed to just lock us in the basement. And we...
Oh, it's giving kidnapping.
Very much so. So we was freaking out.
I'm sorry. I didn't think you meant they locked you in the basement.
No. They locked you. And we were like, how the fuck do we get out of here? But we had some turn up. There was like some very inappropriate shit taking place down there. I wasn't a part of none of it because I was dating at that time. But there was somebody got discovered, masturbating, and it got really weird. And then the problem is that we all had to sleep basically around each other. There was no bed, so we were like crashing on the couch that was down there, sleeping on the floor, whatever. And it was super awkward because it's like, we know that you did, and we caught her, and we're like, why are you doing that? She's like, I'm not doing that. Yes, you are. Like, and then afterwards, the whole basement started having a aroma to it. It just...
An aroma of what?
I don't want to be disrespectful, so I'm going to just say...
To who?
The person who created the aroma via the masturbation.
Oh.
So...
Oh.
Yeah. It was a thing. So, but yeah.
Enough said.
That was that.
Okay, that sounds that's the early 2000s for you, and that's why we turned out how we turned out, because of the shenanigans that were going on and the very, very questionable parenting that was taking place. But don't get me wrong, because there's some of y'all are questionable parents.
Oh, we're going to get into that. For mental people, health, we're going to get into that.
Oh, really? No, I'm actually, the people that I know who are parents, y'all are actually good parents. I'm fucking around. Y'all are great parents. So kudos to y'all. But thank you for that, Rob. That was a cute little stroll back down memory lane.
Oh, you know what we haven't done in a minute, Shan? We got to do the Black Eminence list. We got to add at least one person on the Black Eminence list.
Oh, there's so many more than just one. But okay, so for our closing, we'll do a closing Black Eminence list. We'll do a 2022 closing list of the year. Mm. And we'll do best of.
Wait,
we'll
what's the name of the list?
I had not figured that out yet, so I just put some words together. Black Eminence list,
you just got to say it in the voice.
Oh, the Black Eminence. The Black Eminence list.
Yes, yes, yes.
We should definitely do a 2022 full year list, because y'all were showing out this year. So we definitely have to recognize and give some accolades to some deserving people of color who have been fucking it up this year and making a way and paving the way for others. We love you. So let's go ahead and swing it to the sex segment. Y'all know I love talking about sex. We're gonna take it to the red light district, and we're gonna get a little bit into the science of attraction.
I live for this.
I want to be touched and feel it so much, because everybody needs some good loving.
Yeah, if I need it in the morning or the middle of the night,
I have to find the bed.
Okay, so originally when I started to look up attraction, I really didn't think it was going to be all of what I discovered. So I happened upon this Harvard article, and it really got into the science of lust, attraction, and I believe attachment. So let's get into some details and try to stay with me, because I'm going to bring this home, because after I let you all know what the deal is with our hormones, I want to talk about what we're attracted to. And sometimes you can definitely psychoanalyze that a little bit, but a lot of times it's hormones and we're responding to what our body is giving. But it's all connected. So let's get into a little bit of sex science.
Lay it on me.
So, first and foremost, we are looking at a team of scientists who did a study at Rutgers. So kudos to Dr. Helen Fisher at Rutgers, because this study was from her research. So romantic love, okay, we're talking about attraction, yes, but it all kind of leads to love, or at least we want it to. Romantic love can be broken down into three categories: lust, attraction, and attachment. Each category is characterized by its own set of hormones stemming from the brain. So it all starts in your brain. So a lot of times we talk about our heart and leading with our heart, but a lot of the signals that signify love for us, all of those hormones are stemming from the brain. So that's an interesting tidbit, but we'll get to the rest later. So under lust, you have lust is driven by the desire for sexual gratification. So as we know, lust is like when you're lusting for someone, you want to have sex with them. It's an animal instinct. Like, the evolutionary basis for this stems in our need to reproduce. And that's a need that's shared among all living things. So all living things must reproduce in their own way. And so through that, we pass on our genes, and we can, of course, contribute and perpetuate the species. Okay, so that's what it leads to. Lust is our animal instinct to reproduce. Okay, and so then you have testosterone and you have estrogen. So both of those are like the reproduction hormones, and those are the sex hormones that we think about that stem from the testes and the ovaries. But we think about them in such a, like you said earlier, in such a black and white way. And in reality, both male and female hormones are regulated by testosterone and estrogen. So they play a part in both men and women. It turns out that testosterone increases libido in everybody, in just about everybody. And estrogen does the same thing. The results are less pronounced than with testosterone, but a lot of women report that during their cycle, or, you know, as they're coming on to premenstrual syndrome, that's when their estrogen levels are highest. That's when they feel like the most frisky. And I can absolutely agree to that. It's just kind of what happens because you have all these hormones raging. So that is lust. Now, attraction is a little bit different, and I hope you all are still with me, but this has to be said because it's so interesting and it kind of leads up to what we're going to talk about. But attraction and lust are very closely related, but we can lust for someone we're attracted to and vice versa, but one can also happen without another. Attraction involves the brain pathways that control reward behavior, which explains why the first few weeks or months of a relationship can be like really exciting, really exhilarating, and all consuming, right? Because your brain is rewarding you. So it's a trick of the hormones. So the hormone dopamine is produced by a particular part in the brain, and it is kind of the well-publicized player in the reward pathway. It's released when we do things that feel good to us. So when we do things that we love, dopamine is the hormone that's released. And spending time with loved ones and having sex increases the levels of dopamine, and high levels of this and another hormone, norepinephrine, are released during attraction. So we're getting into a lot of hormones. So you have, and then attachment. So attachment is the predominant factor in long-term relationships. And so lust and attraction are pretty much exclusive to romantic entanglements. Attachment can come from friendships, parent-infant bonding, social cordiality, and other intimacies as well. But it's oxytocin and vasopressin are the two hormones that are going to lead to attachment. So oxytocin is the cuddle hormone. It's like released when you are cuddling and stuff like that. It's a lot like dopamine. And it's released in large quantities when you're doing things where you're bonding, like sex, but also like breastfeeding and like childbirth. There's a bond that's created there, and you're going to find oxytocin there. So it's really interesting because all of these hormones are present while you're falling in love, while you're lusting for somebody, while you're attracted to somebody, but they can also in large amounts be really bad for you. Okay, so then you get into too much dopamine being released is how you might get addicted to drugs. So it's the same hormone that is released when you're addicted to something like that. So you got to be careful. We all know love can be addictive. So I just want to, you know, give you all this warning that a lot of times when you are feeling these emotions, they're stemmed and they're fueled by hormones. And the more hormones that are released, the more attached you might feel, the more high you might feel, that love high. So it's important to know that these also come from your brain. So whatever you're thinking is stemming these hormones to reproduce. So even though it's important to think with your heart, and also trust your intuition, and that is soul driven. What's going on in your brain is really important, and that's why it's essential to master things like meditation, you know, and to master your mind so that when you do meet somebody that you really are attracted to, or that you want to get to know, or someone you can potentially fall in love with, that you don't lose yourself to these hormones causing the emotions that you feel. So I think that was an interesting thing that I wanted to share today. And I wanted to close it out by asking Rob, what are you attracted to in a person?
I mean, after that lengthy, what do we call this? A lecture, that seminar.
That was giving, there was very shady.
No, I'm not shading it. It was very informative. It was very informative.
I know it was a lot, you guys, but I just
personally, I like stuff like that. So I
me too, yeah, me so too. I'm, and other I can people listen don't, to that
like
so.
For hours. But the to ask behind that, that information to say, what are you attracted to? I guess is more so, what is your brain attracted to? Because right. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly. Like, now the question is different. That's why I posed it after I told you this information. Because now you really want to think, you're like, oh, I like them tall. I like them this. I like them that. But like,
has that been what you have been attracted to? Because sometimes we will say that we want something, we long for something, but our bodies are wired to be attracted to something else. A lot of the programming that determines how all of those chemicals work has a lot to do with your upbringing. So you don't really have a lot of choice in what you're attracted to. When we're talking about it from a neuroscience point of view,
because you're conditioned to like the people who are surrounding mm-hmm. you and who's around you.
Or any life event could also alter how those things work within your system. There is a hormone that kind of like floods and pollutes our brain called cortisol. And that's our fight or flight hormone. That's our panic hormone. That's our PTSD hormone. So depending on your life experiences, cortisol can override or recondition your ability to access oxytocin in certain situations. So for example, if you've had experiences where cuddling felt uncomfortable or it felt dangerous, you'll have a disconnect in developing that hormone to pair with that experience. So it gets a little bit complicated, but at the end of the day, when we're talking from this particular point of view, a biological component to love and connection, it's not so much of a question of what are you attracted to, is what have you been attracted to? What have you found that you have been attracted to? And as we come into ourselves and make these decisions, oh, I'm attracted to this, I'm attracted to that, that's probably a manifestation of what you've always been attracted to. You know what I mean? So yeah, but I like the shy types.
All that to say, I like the shy types.
What about you? What are you attracted to? Or what have you been attracted to?
I will say most consistently, and I can say I'm attracted to, you know, a person who looks like this or a person who looks like that. But to be honest, the switch up is real. And what you say you think you like, sometimes you see somebody and they just do it for you.
Okay, yeah.
It's animal instinct. But I will say most, if not all, of the people that I've really been into, they're an artist in some way. I'm usually not into the alpha male, really into sports. Like, that's generally not the type of guy that I go for. I usually like somebody who's a little more under the radar, but, you know, is an artist and has that moment where they can shine and will shine. And I think it's, as an artist, a lot easier to find someone who relates to your schedule and your lifestyle as an artist, because I find that there's a disconnect with people who aren't artists. They don't really seem to understand what the lifestyle is like, how busy and sporadic it can be, and the travel. So I believe I love the artsy type. I love me.
I got a question. I dated an artist once, and I thought that it would be everything, but it wasn't. I didn't like it. I found that it was very smothering to me. And I'm asking genuinely, have you felt like your art, you have a relationship with it, but somebody is always trying to be in it because they're an artist too? They're like,
well, honestly, for me, I actually enjoy collaborating with other artists. So most of the time when I'm dating somebody, I love a good project. We're going to do this project together. Let's start this together. I'm actually a fan of that. I just think that depending on the personalities, it might not work. And artists are very needy, but each artist is needy in their own way. Some people need attention. That's me. Hi, hello. That's me. I need attention. It's more stimulation, you know, whether that be mental stimulation, or I'm a very words of affirmation type person. So what you say to me and your willingness to converse and respond are something that are important. Those are things that are important to me. But yeah, artists are different, and a lot of artists are tortured, and that's like the downside, I believe, to being an artist and to dating an artist, is that they all have this tortured side, and it can sometimes fuel their artistry, but it can also equally be a block to other things in their life that need to change. So, word. Yeah, dating an artist is hard. Dating an artist is hard, and you're an artist.
Yeah. And I was actually having this same exact conversation with a friend of mine, Neova. Shout out to her. Shout out to Intimate Sessions, all that good stuff. But we were literally just talking about this last night, as she's an artist as well. And there is this quote, and I need to find it because I want to print it and hang it up. But it says something along the lines of, an artist is a person that is on the cusp between having something to say and needing to hide. And so,
oh my God, wow.
I feel like every artist, if you know, you know. And I feel like there's this transcending torture that does exist within a true artist's heart. And to some extent, it's essential to experience that torture, because it's the friction and the clash that creates the art in the first place. I'm sensitive about my shit. I don't like that. I dated somebody and she was like trying. I remember we were on a date and this was so fucking weird. But she was in a different place in her career. I had already found where I wanted to be in terms of my creative career. She had just moved to New York because she wanted to get there. But we just on a date and she's like, oh, so you're a choreographer? She knew Siena College because it's a D1 school. She's like, you're a choreographer over there? And I'm like,
It's a D1 school. A boo. You heard it.
Okay.
It's a D1 school.
Shout out to Siena. But I was like, yeah, I coach this and blah, 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 blah. And she was like, okay, well, do a routine for me right now. I'm like, what? Like, why?
I don't like when people do that. No, I don't like when
Let me see. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? But I had to definitely put her in her place. Like, I understand why you are grinding, hustling, ready to perform at the drop of a dime, because you're still trying to find your window and your opportunity. I found mine already. So I don't have to do the things that you're doing. I've done the auditions and the thises and the shucking and the driving and the being so happy that I got this. I've done that, but now I'm past that. She was still, you know, she was a singer, so she was going on auditions and, you know, that was her journey. So, but it was a frustrating experience for sure. If I date an artist, I feel like I want someone that is an art that's very different from mine, or not at all. I tend to prefer people with more technical, or I don't know if prefer is the right word, but I'm more compatible with people with more technical minds, just because I express my emotions and my thoughts in a very technical way. So
I can dig that. I can dig that. And I feel like as an artist, for me, it's kind of the opposite. I don't know if this makes me a narcissist or not, but it's kind of like looking into that mirror and seeing that part of that tortured soul and relating to that and being able to see yourself in that person is something that I really relate to. But I have been in a situation, in a relationship, that one of the things that we did not do well and were not compatible with was working together. And I believe that, like you said, when you're in different places in your career, there can be some resentment, there can be some comparison, and that can really taint a situation where one person feels like they're not where they should be, and their partner is approaching another milestone or pivoting to another place in their career. So that can be hard. And I think that if you build a good foundation for a relationship, you can get through stuff like that. But if it's something that, you know, if it's one of those relationships that came together in a couple weeks, you might not stand the test of that. So I can definitely relate. It doesn't work for everybody in every personality type. So I think that those factors, personalities, always play in experiences, like you said earlier, the things that have happened in your life that frame who you are really determine if it's going to work with you or not. So, but yeah, thank you for, I never said what, yes, I did. I said, I'm attracted to artists.
Conversation.
You know, because I guess my whole thing is we never talked about anything physical, and I think ready to go in that direction, but it took another turn, which I think these things always take on a life of their own. Absolutely. So I can appreciate that. And shout out to all my sexy, sexy artists out there. I see you and I love you. Thank you. Moving forward, what do you have for us for Mental Health and Society, Big Raw?
Yo.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. All I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
So for Mental Health and Society, we're going to get into it, all right? So we're going to talk about learning development. I came across some information and some research about these pandemic babies. And according to medical research, these young children are experiencing pandemic-related stress and trauma without the buffer of nurturing support and relationships and stuff. And so they're facing developmental, emotional, and behavioral problems. So they started looking into this study, and further research showed that a lot of young children experience delays in their cognitive and motor skills. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that school was quarantined. A lot of people don't know that 90% of your brain development occurs in kindergarten. Well, up in and before kindergarten. So this lack of human interaction, this lack of social handling of problems and dealing with physical objects related to learning brought about a lot of anger, withdrawal, anxiety, and aggression in we're talking about toddlers, very young kids. And so there is a stall in the education system right now where when people had just came back to school, when they opened up school, every student was behind, not just in terms of not having the information, but being able to compute and connect concepts. So it was almost like digging back like two grades. It was wild. And I know that in our first episode, we talked about how like these generations overlapped and stuff like that. And I definitely expanded on that on my show, The Group Sessions. We went off. I got to send you the link because I basically tailored it off of what we had talked about in our episode. But one of the reasons why, like, as generations progress, the kids are kind of getting smarter and more exposed is because they're having access to more materials at a younger age. So when we have a whole pandemic where these materials are limited, we're stopping a lot of development. And a lot of this has to do with one of the most renowned names in psychology when it comes to childhood learning and development, Jean Piaget. He is the guru and came up with the idea of stages of childhood development when it comes to learning, you know. So he believed and did the research on the fact that there was like four stages of childhood development. You had your sensory motor stage, which was birth to 2 years. And that was pretty much learning how to manipulate, you know, hands, objects, things like that. And then the next stage was from 2 to 7, where you learned about language, memory, imagination, things like that. And then after that, from 7 to 11, you learned concrete operational things. So that was like using logic to manipulate things, learning how to be less egocentric, understanding the world from like a this connects to that. And then finally, as your adolescence to adulthood, you start to connect abstract concepts and use the scientific method on different levels and stuff like that. So when we're looking at people who are kids in these, let's say 2 to 7, if that's the years that you're supposed to be developing language, memory, and imagination, but you're not exposed to the materials that an average 2 to 7 year old would be exposed to, those things are going to lag. Or if it's if you're 1 to 2 years old and it's like the sensory motor activity is being limited because of quarantine, you're going to lack those fine motor skills, you know? So this is what was going on. And I wanted to really get your opinion on this because this is, to me, it's an issue of concern, but we also have to remember, like we talked about in episode one, this is not our world anymore. This is Gen Z's world. So I wonder does that mean that the world is going to be tailored around these skill deficiencies? Because remember, at some point we were learning how to tell time in school. They don't even teach that no more. Or like penmanship, they don't teach that no more. So I'm wondering if this is like a transition between like competency versus relevancy, or should we be concerned with the fact that these kids are lacking these essentials?
I am going to give you a page from old Robert's book. That's you, Robert. And remember last episode when you were telling me that as things evolve and the kids evolve, certain things are going to become obsolete? I kind of do believe that same thing when it comes to the things that they decide not to learn at, like, you know, telling, you know, time on a hand and a clock and a watch or whatever like that. Now, I do believe they still learn that in some school, in some school systems, Maryland in particular, just because, well, first I want to share my experience, but I do feel like half and half on it. during the pandemic, when I work in a nonprofit and I do dabble now in arts education, I'm more in programs now, but I was full-time in arts education when the pandemic hit. And so my job came up with a program that helped students along during the day with their virtual school. And so we would walk them through every single class. We would be next to them during their class periods and assist them and kind of aid them in their learning virtually, because it was such an adjustment. And what I found was a severe hole in the education, because the teachers weren't really able to make sure that each child had a comprehension of what was going on. I know one of my students, she was in a Spanish immersion school and she spoke no Spanish. So when it came to her teacher speaking to her in Spanish, she would give the very minimum. We would Google Translate the rest. And that was how she learned Spanish, from me Google translating things and trying to explain things to her. But it was such a struggle and there was such a gap. So if the parents weren't there, or there wasn't a tutor there or an assistant there or a nanny there to walk them through what the teacher was giving them online, they were missing a lot. So I know that firsthand. And so after the pandemic, we started testing reading levels and they were extremely low. So what I am afraid of is the reading levels. And, you know, one of the things that was one of the downfalls of our generation and how we matriculated through school was No Child Left Behind. That was, I think, one of the downfalls. They meant great. They had good intentions. They thought it would be for the greater good, but it ended up being to the detriment of a lot of people, because a lot of people were passed so that they would be with their classmates and they couldn't read. So I do feel like what we need now in our society is a new, renewed reading initiative, because a lot of kids do not like to read. There's a lot of YouTube going on. YouTube is babysitting the kids. I know a select few kids who like to read, on my one hand. And the generation behind us, my niece is in that generation. And I remember once I got her some books for Christmas. She was younger. She was sorely disappointed. And I thought I was giving her the world, you know, because things were different. So I really am nervous for the reading levels. And you already know reading is how you find out information they're trying to hide from you. So, and I'm not talking about on the internet, I'm talking about in books. So though they will be sufficient in internet research and being able to, they're the internet generation almost fully realized, I think that the disconnect is going to be in the fundamentals, i.e. reading books. So
I'm glad that you mentioned that. I agree wholeheartedly in terms of in some type of initiative. I would even go as far to say not just reading, like a whole literacy initiative. And as you were explaining it, I'm thinking to myself, well, it's kind of weird that they didn't just automatically do that. Y'all knew what was going to happen with all of these kids not being in school for 2 years, 3 years. Like, it would have made so much sense for there just to be a national literacy initiative to bring kids back into school.
Well, look who we had in office. Look who we had in office. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to look at the people who, because to be honest, this is not me throwing shade to anybody in office, but it really matters. Look at Michelle. If Michelle was, you know, she was the first lady, if she was FLOTUS when the pandemic hit, it might have been a different story. There would definitely, absolutely be a reading initiative.
That's a new spit in facts, because while Trump was in office, there wasn't a present first lady.
At all. Not in the least.
And those types of things, I don't want to say fall on the first lady's plate, but historically the first lady of office would take on those type of social change initiatives, types of things.
If you ever, Right. And if you watch First Lady, which Viola Davis, I feel like we might have touched on this last year.
We talked about
Viola's probably one of her only roles that was not highly loved and revered. And, you know, she said it herself, you know, you got good days, you got bad days. Some roles are not going to work. Some things just don't work. And her as the First Lady didn't work. But what I did find out was that Michelle really was not about all of that, you know, hoity toity, the First Lady in the garden and the fruits vegetables. She was not trying to, and they were trying to make her a Black Martha Stewart, but she found her footing in that and she turned it into something so much bigger. And it was important. And I think that the same thing goes for every FLOTUS. It doesn't have to be one thing, but you have to have something that is your project. And I think that all really started with Eleanor Roosevelt. So, and she was one of the first ladies featured in that show as well. But one of the things that tie these ladies together is that they just didn't sit in the position of the First Lady of the United States and be pretty. They decided to actually make moves and stand their ground and do something with it. And that is a beautiful thing. But unfortunately, we did not have that. We didn't have that. And so it was a hole, I think, that was missing. And it does sound really ridiculous. Like, why isn't there some type of initiative? Obviously, the kids fell behind. Obviously. But that's the world.
That's a fact. And I'm also trying, I'm not a historian, so I'm not great with history, but I feel like there, when it comes to education initiatives, period, there's too little of them. You know, we had the Head Start program, that was a big deal. Between that and the No Child Left Behind, I don't really know of too many government policies to modify the approach to education. I know that there's certain school districts that revamped the way that they outline the curriculum, but that wasn't a government decision. It was more so a competing with China's academic performance decision. So this is something we definitely have to dive more into this on another episode, because it's just kind of opening Pandora's box about how education is truly valued in this country. But yeah.
And teachers. Get into it. And teachers.
That's a fact.
Broke their neck.
I think we should look up when Teacher Appreciation Week is and bring on some educators.
Oh, Teacher Appreciation Week is going to be, it's usually in like, I think, between the March and the March to the June area, because I'm a teacher and I'm always appreciated. I know that probably none of my students are listening to this, and you shouldn't be. But maybe some of my former students who are now grown, I love you all so very much. And you all appreciate your teachers, because they are a lot of what and who make up who we are. Our parents are very instrumental, our families, but our teachers.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't get enough credit, and they don't get paid enough. They don't. Okay. And TikTok is letting everybody know how much they are undervalued, highlighting on the TikTok. I love to see like teacher stories. That's some of my favorite TikTok stuff. But yeah, thanks for that conversation, Rob. Absolutely. As always, it got deep.
Of course. And if you guys want to hear more about topics like these, head over to robertstmichael.com. I do a bunch of public health initiatives, so many different ways for you to maintain your own mental health hygiene. Preventative care is the best care. So pull up. But thank you guys for tuning into this episode. Shannon, this might be one of my favorite episode outfits for you.
You think
I'm
so?
Digging the purple. Like, I'm digging the purple. It's pulling up. It's giving me retro futuristic. And I like it.
If you're and I love the retro futuristic look. And let me plug my shit. If you want to learn more about how much I love the Afrofuturistic look and aesthetic, go look at Black on the Moon TV,
head over there.
On YouTube and on Instagram at Black on the Moon TV, and you will see we're talking about Wakanda Forever, which the Afrofuturistic vibe is very prevalent.
Very heavy.
But today I need Fela to give me an advertisement, but give me a ambassadorship. But I am wearing Fela's. I love Fela's forever. I love Atlanta, is what we say in Atlanta. And they have a preppiness to them, especially now they're kind of going back to basics. Too. Yes, they're going back to basics, and they kind of changed up their style. And go to the Fela website. Don't sleep on it, y'all. But I'm also, if you're watching, debuting a new hair color, which is purple for the season. So the purple people eater.
Ooh, I just got a hangover lady. When you said that. Like, oh my gosh.
The grape lady. You can call me the grape lady. But yeah.
Is a drink that will take you the fuck out.
Ooh, it sounds anything blue, purple, it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. Anytime they gotta put a color on it, that means the mix is too lethal. The mix is lethal, baby.
That's a fact.
It's lethal.
Well, let the people know where can they find you on your personal page and stuff like that. Cause you don't just do Black on the Moon TV, you do other things, right?
I do. You're right. I do other things like doing me. I do that every single day. And you can find me.
Never. Is that the episode title, Doing Me?
I'm doing me every single day. And I do it at I am Shannon Ashlea, no spaces, no underscores, on Instagram. And then where can we find us? Where can you find us, Rob?
Oh, tell I'm so glad that you asked. Head right over to thebridgemillennialpodcast.com. You can catch up, keep up with the episodes, submit us some feedback. We're streaming everywhere that matters. We're also on Instagram at the Bridge Millennial Podcast. That's our most active social media. You can also catch us on Twitter at the Glitch Homie. If you know, you know. We're also on Facebook. We got Facebook, right? We out here on the Facebook streets. Honestly,
we got the book of faces.
It's giving Google me. Like, just Google the Bridge Millennial Podcast. You're gonna find what you need to find. Don't play with me. But it's been real. I appreciated this episode. And I'm so happy to be back again. I'm looking forward to everything that we have coming out in the future. And yeah, it's gonna be a dope season. Season two, we out here in these streets.
We're out here. Get ready for some holiday fun next time on the bridge. And we'll see y'all soon. We love you.
Later. Mwah.